You're listening to The Local Maximum, episode 194.
Time to expand your perspective. Welcome to The Local Maximum. Now, here's your host, Max Sklar.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome. You have reached another Local Maximum. Aaron, thanks once again for joining me. I know it's a lot of times in a row, but I've got you know, a bunch of days of traveling coming up, so I've got to have a few of these shows in the can here.
So always glad to join for a late night chat.
Yeah, a late night chat. you know, I wonder what would happen if we did this at like 8 in the morning at one point.
Yeah, I think we're pathologically incapable of recording when the sun is out.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like a vampire thing.
So, okay, I actually wanted to talk about Steve Jobs today. Because we're actually at the 10th anniversary of his death, which is, that feels kind of crazy. That's a long time. But before we get into that, let's talk about the news story that we're not talking about. I mean, I guess we are technically talking about it because but I didn't want to say that much about it, which is, Facebook. Well, first of all, they had this like kind of technical meltdown the other day, when all the services were down for many hours. Now, again, this is the story we're not talking about, so I did not do any research on how that happened. But it's always interesting how you see that, and then you see this whole whistleblower thing that went before Congress, and it's all the same stuff with Facebook just rehashed over and over again.
Just out of curiosity,
yeah.
When and how did you find out about the Facebook outage?
Oh, that's a good question. I found out about it on Twitter, but I think I use Twitter more than Facebook, which is, I think, just as unhealthy as Facebook. If people are like, Facebook is or maybe Instagram is unhealthy for teenage girls, but I feel like Twitter is unhealthy for adults. So
it fairly early on in the process, or were you a latecomer to that information? I guess if it was trending on Twitter, probably caught that pretty quick.
Probably. But I mean, unless I was asleep or something, I don't know.
Well, I guess what time did it actually start? Do you recall? Yeah,
no. I don't know if it was during the day.
I didn't find out until like 7 at night.
Yeah.
Cause I was
you're lucky,
late at work in the lab, and I only found out about it because somebody was whining about it in Slack.
Yeah. You're not on it. So there used to be a time when Slack would go down and then everyone would go home from work. But
of Slack or just Foursquare Slack?
No, all of Slack. So Facebook went down. Now, the really bad thing about that is that a few hours later, it came back.
There were definitely some hot takes about that.
And then we had the whistleblower, which was totally unrelated,
or was it?
Yeah, I know. It's just like, it's, I don't want to get, it starts getting very political, and it starts getting very, the whole thing that I've rehashed, which is on Facebook, like, yes, everyone hates Facebook, but some people hate Facebook for different reasons and they want them to be even worse. And so it's like, it's hard to, I don't know, it's hard to follow some.
Do you know nothing of politics? This is how coalitions are built.
Yeah.
We want completely different things, but we hate the same thing.
Yeah. I guess so.
And that's enough to build a government, just not enough to actually accomplish anything.
Right. Because what if the one group that hates it because they're not doing enough of the thing that the other group hates it for?
Right, we said we weren't going to talk about it, so I'm going to pull back a little bit.
No, yeah. I mean, we can get into it so much. No, I think that the Steve Jobs story, if you could call it a story, it's something that people are, there's a little bit of chatter about. You know, people talk about this stuff online because Steve Jobs is a pretty compelling kind of figure in the computer world. And but this is something, I feel like it's worth talking about because it's really like that 10 years is such a different era. We've talked about all the changes that have gone through. And I feel like in this one person, we can maybe learn a little bit more if we explore that a little bit. So, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I don't know if it's hyperbole or not, but I feel like you could very easily say that there's a cult of Jobs. That he's got a fanatical following in many ways, and there can be arguments to be made that it deserve it or not. But there's
I think
there's a mythology about him that, that was there even before his passing.
I think it's deserved. I think there is, you always have to be, alert that you're not just copying someone who you admire and then even copying the things that he was bad at, because I feel like there are, you know, okay, we'll get into, there were times when he was a real jerk, and that's not why he got all these things done. If just being a jerk got things done, you know, there'd be tons of people on the street building all these amazing devices every day, but they just don't do it.
It's like, what's the celebrity chef, the Hell's Kitchen guy?
I don't know.
No, but he's clearly very talented in running businesses and in his skills as a chef. But the reason he makes good television is that he's a very abusive individual to people who are not doing things as he sees the right way. And there's a lot that can be taken from him as a mentor, but probably not that bit.
Yeah. My guess is that, you know, Steve Jobs was able to get away with some of that because he had, and again, I don't, you know, I didn't know him. I just, you know, read stuff about him and looking from afar and maybe got like, you know, talk to people who have spoken to him on very rare occasion, but it's kind of like, I do think that he had special gifts that most people don't have, and a special way of looking at the world that most people don't have. So it wasn't just someone in the right place at the right time. But yeah, that doesn't, you know, that doesn't mean that everything he does is part of that package. And it doesn't mean that if you copy, if you copy parts of his personality that maybe aren't so great, that all of a sudden you're going to accomplish all the stuff that Steve Jobs accomplished. And it's quite a list that I have here, which was just a list that I wrote in 10 seconds. I'm sure the list is far longer, but sorry, go ahead.
Let's hear the list and I'll come back.
So it was the start of Apple Computer. And then, you know, they built the Apple II, which was the actual first one that was, the first home PC, that they built, that he built with Steve Wozniak, that was actually, like popular, because I think the Apple I was not really, first of all, it wasn't like,
that was it, like a home built.
Yeah. It didn't really have a monitor attached, and it wasn't, they maybe sold a small number of copies in one store, but the Apple II was pretty big. Then there was, you know, I wrote down the Macintosh in 84, because if you go online and look at that presentation, that's a pretty big one, a pretty cool one.
Did you, growing up, maybe it wasn't literally an Apple II, but was it like the Apple IIe? I feel like those we had those in our school.
But possibly, yeah.
I remember it had the green-only monitor and playing possibly the first iteration, maybe it wasn't the first iteration, but a very early version of Oregon Trail.
Yeah. That's and you had to, every time you got it to a new level, you had to switch out the discs.
Oh yeah, those like 8.5-inch floppy discs.
Yeah. Okay, enough of
nostalgia time.
Yeah, enough nostalgia time.
What was the next innovation?
Then he gets removed from the company. Believe
that
it
was
or
back
not.
In the 80s.
That was back in the 80s, and actually we did a. When I was in business school in leadership and organizations at Stern, we did a whole case study on that, and it turned out one of the figures in that was Donna Dubinsky, who I actually met through, like, you know, a friend of my family, which was interesting.
I think you've mentioned that name on the podcast before.
And so, that was another situation where he brought in a CEO. He brought in the guy from Coca-Cola, and God, I don't even remember the names anymore. But you know, there was a bit of a personality clash and a power struggle. He just couldn't let go, and so when that thing happens, you know, it didn't work out. So then he starts Next Computer, and then he's also involved in Pixar. And he's involved in the making of the creation of Toy Story. And then he positions Next to get taken over. I almost said conquered. Taken over by Apple again, so that then he becomes CEO again. He recaptures his old company.
He Trojan horsed them.
Yeah. And then, he convinced the board to say, you know, let me take over again. Maybe. Well, there could have been a variety of reasons. He was older, more mature. Because remember, when he was starting Apple, he was a young guy. He was in his 20s, you know? And so...
Which was much less common in the 80s, I guess late 70s, early 80s, than it was in the early 2000s.
Right.
We become much more accustomed to 20-something entrepreneurs building gargantuan businesses.
Yeah, but now you can do that in software. I mean, that like they were doing hardware and like inventing the whole category. I don't know. It just seems harder. Sometimes when you look back, it's always like, well, it was easier. All these things weren't invented yet. But sometimes you could also look at that in hindsight as well. But then you get to the iMac, which is still going strong. You get to the iPod, which was a very big deal. And talk about the 9/11 episode. That one, that launch was kind of low key because it came out, a month or two after 9/11. But he was pretty good at this thing is 1,000 songs. You keep it in your pocket. That's a big deal. Then the iTunes store, which you might think, that's like a website where you buy music. What's the big deal? Like we have it turned into Apple Music now. Like, no, he had to work with the music company, which is like, a bunch of awful people, is it from what I hear? And so he had to twist some arms like you wouldn't believe. And, if I remember the book correctly, like the Isaacson book, I read that in 2014. I don't remember when Ross Perot got involved at some point. Then he created the Apple physical stores. And then in 2007, with a big one comes the iPhone. And then, the iPad in 2011, finally, as his health is declining. So he had a very kind of short life, but... he did. He was pretty productive. It puts us all to shame.
Hard to argue with that.
Yeah. So I don't know which one of these was the biggest one. I almost feel like it's either. I almost want to say it's either the iMac or the iPhone.
You didn't even mention the iPhone. I think that slipped through that you did.
Oh, did I? Maybe I did in my mind. That was the biggest one. Yeah, the iPhone in 2007. I think either that was the biggest or possibly the Macintosh in 84, just because I think that...
Tough to gauge that, given how young we... Well, I mean, we were born then. We don't have the perspective in the moment.
Right. I'm looking at it more as an historian, because that sort of brings the point and click. he invented Windows, even though that's horrible, and also they didn't actually invent the graphical interface either. That came from, they totally copied that off Xerox or something, but it popularized it. That actually same with iPhone and same with the iPod too. They were MP3 players. They just sucked. And he's like, I'm going to build one of these that doesn't suck. And they knew how to do it.
Yeah. Apple is generally not a first mover. They're the first to do it well or do it right though. And so they managed to capture the market kind of wholeheartedly.
Yeah. I remember I went to a talk from an Apple designer once who said, and this was years ago. And he said, we try not to get into the mindset of people are going to buy this just because it's Apple. No, it has to be, if it's not just right, if it's not a magical experience, they just you want to just nix it. I mean, I'm sure that was a statement of, this is how it works in theory, in not just in theory, but in like an ideal. That's like their ideal.
Right.
They want, they want the magical experience or bust. They don't want to put out half-assed stuff and then have people use it and say, hey, Apple's pretty good, but sometimes they put out half-assed stuff. They want people saying that. Now, I'm sure there are examples of Apple putting out half-assed stuff.
Well, I was going to say that mentality is rooted in something that's very apparent for, I think, for children of the 80s and 90s, so our generation included, that there was this Mac versus PC. I mean, there was even a whole ad campaign built around that.
All right, with Justin dichotomy. Long and who was the other
John
guy?
John Hodgman.
Yeah.
But that PC was more or less an open source, fully interoperable platform You could roll your own. You could build your own PC. But Mac was a curated experience. They, you know, it wasn't quite the Henry Ford. You can have it in any color you want as long as it's black approach. There were different, you know, levels and versions and options. But you didn't crack open your Mac and put in a better graphics card. You could maybe put more RAM in. I don't even know if that was possible. That it might as well have been much like iPods and iPhones, a completely sealed system.
Yeah.
And that enabled them to have a much more flawless process because they literally controlled the hardware and the software, and you know it was computer vertical integration.
Right.
Whereas Windows, they controlled the operating system, but there was you know Windows certified hardware, but that was it was a standard, but it didn't mean that every Windows PC had been tested all the edge cases.
I remember
and Microsoft put their stamp of approval that it'll work flawlessly.
In 1994, it wasn't Mac versus PC, it was Mac versus IBM compatible. You'd say.
Well, right, yeah, I think
people would say, yeah.
And I guess our first home computer in my household, it was a Windows PC, but it was pre Windows 95. It was still, 3.1.1. And I think,
I feel like we have a lot of people in our audience that's around our age that's going to recognize that
we weren't quite old enough to have used like an actual IBM operating system. I've messed with some of those on really old laptops.
I used DOS.
Well, yeah, sure. and DOS as well. But for a while, IBM was actually a competitor in the operating system market, and that fizzled out pretty quickly.
I still call like terminals DOS. Be like, open up DOS. I don't really call it that. I do use the DOS emulator though. You could still play all the old games on there literally on your browser.
Well, the Internet Archive is an excellent source for a lot of that stuff. If you need to get your Oregon Trail nostalgia I think you can go back and play like all of the different iterations. Yeah. Wow. So whichever first version you found, go check it out on the archive.
Arkanoid 2. I'll link to that in the show notes page, localmaxradio.com/194 at Arkanoid 2. Okay, so now I want to get into, there's a few things about Steve Jobs that I want to get into. There's so much, you can't just get into someone's whole biography. Even like an average person, like, who lived for, 50 years or however old he was, there's a lot in that person's life to get through. But there are a few things that stand out. One was, he believed in diversity, but it wasn't the type of diversity that they talk about today, which just drives me nuts.
Yeah, it's very tempting to ask the question,
what would
if Jobs was alive today, would he be canceled? Or how would he be pivoting in this current climate? Which
I
is
think he would have.
A weird counterfactual to be asking.
It's not weird
something
at all.
We can get out of that without just making it, political mudslinging and finger pointing. There we go.
No, it's. I think he would have been. I think that there would be people who would try to cancel him. I think it would be very difficult to do to him in particular because of the cult status. It's like almost like when they tried to cancel J.K. Rowling and Harry Potter, like that, canceled. Like it just became like, okay, she was criticized on Twitter, but no one actually canceled Harry Potter, and no one actually deplatformed her. I feel like a similar sort of thing might have happened to Steve Jobs. That's just my guess. But anyway, so when he was talking about diversity, he meant he wanted to have a diversity of experiences among his employees. In other words, he didn't want them all going to the same schools and literally just going through the same assembly line of high school, college, whatever the best first job on your resume is, all the way to Apple. And so if he saw, I feel like, a group of people that all had that same exact experiences and they all thought the same way, that's what you have today, but then they call it diversity if there's some kind of, if there's some kind of like racial diversity or gender diversity, but everybody could literally be carbon copies of each other in terms of how they think. But Steve Jobs would actually say, no, he wants to hire people with unique experiences. And he would talk about things like, you know, traveling around the world. Now, I've done some traveling, but, you know, he did some crazy stuff. He, like, you know, went to India and, you know, did all this spiritual journey type stuff, probably a lot of drug use. But he wanted people...
This was after, like, when the Beatles went to India and had their Sgt. Yeah. Pepper's phase.
Well, he was in a very same vein. He was a huge fan of the Beatles. And that's why I think they still use the Beatles sometimes in Apple promos. And so it's definitely in conflict. Well,
and they had that... that conflict with them over the, because isn't Apple Music the label that the Beatles created?
Oh, I didn't know.
I think that's why it was called iTunes and not just Apple Music that was pre-existing.
Oh, really? Now it's called Apple Music.
I would have to actually fact check myself on this, but perhaps they in the intervening decades they've worked something out with them over that trademark.
Yeah. So. Right. So he was very much into people who did things who didn't have the right exact resume. And a good example, maybe this is not a great example, but like there's always the example of, you know, he was into calligraphy, or he took calligraphy in college or something like that, and then brought that into the fonts. They basically popularized the fonts, and that became very popular, whereas a lot of, you know, people who were working on computers at the time, computer scientists, engineers, were like, what's the point of fonts? I mean, there should be one font and that will just make everything a lot simpler. And he was like, no, this actually, you know, look, people for centuries have made a big deal about how letters are written. And so there must be something important to this.
Well, yeah. And part of the whole Apple ethos has always been design from more of like an almost architectural perspective rather than, you know, hardware engineer perspective, that you would expect two guys building computers in their garage to come at it from.
Yeah.
Am I misremembering, or was at some point, did Apple have Think Different as their slogan?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, they did.
So that fits very much with this, that he was looking for diversity of thought, that people who were going to be coming at problems with completely different backgrounds and experiences and ways of thinking about things, you know, to overuse a cliche, that to think outside of the box. That's what
all of these were used in Silicon Valley too. When he was trying to come up with logo with sayings, and it was all of it was a saying that you know, someone else.
To go on a tangent for a moment. So you are familiar with the conjoined triangles of success?
Is that in, that's in Silicon Valley? Yes.
So I recently shared that in the context of some sort of you know, productivity engineering jargon speak, and someone pointed out, you know, that triangle and that color scheme, that really looks like the anarchist flag, which I can't imagine was accidental. I think they intentionally snuck that in there.
Especially since one of the characters on the show was supposed to be an anarchist, right?
The Guilfoyle?
He was a Satanist too.
You could be two things.
Yeah, that's true. He probably was. The example. Well, one of the examples that sticks out in my mind of Jobs being a jerk, but also the story was this guy came in to interview as like a product manager, and the guy was just completely conventional. Steve Jobs apparently felt that he was completely conventional in every way, and somehow took like a real disliking to him. Imagine if that happens in a job interview. Or maybe he was just having a bad day and he started asking questions like, have you ever done LSD? Are you a virgin? And then when the guy started talking, he started saying, gobble, gobble, gobble. That's just all it says. And I'm like, that just sounds not the right way to handle a situation.
Those questions certainly seem like the type of thing that would be inappropriate to ask in an interview when we get you a serious talking to by HR.
Yeah.
Maybe not back then, but probably even back then, that was... ill-advised, but he was
the HR. He was
I could almost see if it hadn't jumped to the gobble gobble bit. I could almost see how he would be using those to kind of get a feel for
I don't think we have the gobble gobble bit in context. I don't really understand what was going on there. I remember it from the book.
Like I've had bad interviews, but I've never had an interview where the interviewer became actively hostile to me. Normally you would think that they'd politely or maybe not so politely be like, yeah, this interview is over. Thank you for your time.
Right.
But Steve Jobs apparently was he must have been blown off steam or venting on this guy somehow.
Yeah. I mean, this is something that probably happened 40 years ago that we're debating.
Yeah, because not only did he decide that I'm not going to hire this guy, but it is worth spending the time to just needle him a little bit more rather than going on to the next thing on my schedule today.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, and this was when Apple was small. So I remember that from the book, but I pulled that up from a Business Insider article, Steve Jobs Being a Jerk, 7 Examples, that was written in 2014. And so that was one. But here's another example that I actually think is a little bit more justified.
There's some nuance here.
Yeah. No, it was like he fired the guy who was in charge of Mobile Me in front of the team.
Now, for some context, what was Mobile Me? Because I've never heard of this.
Right. Well, there's a good reason why you've never heard of it, because it was basically a project that was sort of a failure. It was sort of let me pull it up on Wikipedia just to make sure. I kind of feel like it is a discontinued subscription-based collection of online services and software offered by Apple Inc. Eventually replaced by iCloud. Okay, yes, so I remember this. So it was a proto iCloud, something that was supposed to sync all your stuff, and apparently that was a much harder problem than it sounds like. And they couldn't get like everything to work, and like, you know, whatever you wanted to do, you had to do all this technical stuff. And he blew off steam by saying, what's this product supposed to do? And then he did get answers, and he was like, well, why doesn't it do it? and then he fired the guy in charge. But you know what? He was very ruthless in taking down projects and teams that weren't working. And he, you know, and that's business, that's running a company. And some of that, I feel like, was actually not just part of him being a jerk, but actually part of the success, like part of saying, no, we're not going to do certain things. And we're, you know, we're going to try to have a good intuition for what's working and what's not. And you should be able to ask a simple question. Can you do something? And if it's, you know, you always know you're in trouble. And I find this myself too, when I'm trying to explain what I did and then I just start running in circles. I'm like, oh my God, I really need to simplify this, because this answer is not so great. I mean, half this podcast is me trying to describe things and then realizing it. Okay, next time I'm going to do better.
Yeah, it's hard to judge how much of that what he was doing there was the ruthlessness necessary. Could he have accomplished the same things in a way that wasn't perhaps as abusive, or was it a necessary component to the success there, that if he hadn't called this guy out in front of, you know, a big meeting and you know, kind of burned him to the ground and then fired him, would it have had the same effect? Yes, there are other ways he could have basically canceled the project, you know, quietly, you know, sent some memos and had it done. But would it have had the same impact on the company at large and the rest of the team, and, you know, redirected and motivated them as it did? And I, you know, not having been in the room and not having any internal knowledge of the company, really, I can't answer that. But it's an interesting question to ask. I think Jobs would probably have been a believer of the whole the medium is the message thing, and there's definitely an element of that there.
The medium is the message, So
it's not not just what you're saying, but how you're saying is a huge piece of it.
Yeah, yeah, this also reminds me of later on in Apple, which was after Steve Jobs, when there was Scott Forstall and on Apple Maps. Apple Maps was kind of not going the way they wanted. They replaced him with Eddie Q, all that, and that affected us at Foursquare.
I didn't follow the internals, but I know for a long time that Apple Maps was
By the way, I could have reversed the two people there, the two executives. I can't remember these people.
But it was definitely the also ran. I mean, MapQuest kind of went out with the times well before that. But there was a period where Google Maps was far and away the mapping of choice, and people on iPhones complained that for a while you couldn't get Google Maps on your iPhone. You had to use Apple Maps, and it was a clearly inferior product at that point.
Right.
I think they've recovered from most of that reputational hit, but it took a while.
Right. Right. So it's, you know, he wasn't the type of person that kind of left things be. Like, he wouldn't look at a team and be like, okay, I guess this is, I guess these guys are working. I better not disturb them. No, he would actually go in and, which is, you know, how I would be sometimes, but he would actually go in and very, very curious person, and apparently would, and, you know, forgive me, I always feel weird talking about this when I don't really know the people involved directly, or I wasn't there, but from what I hear, very curious person. I mean, that's what this recent article in the Wall Street Journal from Joni Ive, who was the lead designer that worked very closely with Jobs and very close with him, said. He was just very curious about what everyone was doing and was constantly asking questions. There's also a story, if you got stuck with him in the elevator and he asked you a question, your job was on the line. But I think you just better have an answer. But there's a certain, there's a certain way he did it that I probably wouldn't like. But on the other hand, he probably, you know, a lot of times as someone who works with technology, as someone who's a software engineer, there's a lot of nonsense in management, particularly middle management, when they're micromanaging you. And I feel like at times on the good side, perhaps, Steve Jobs was like, I'm going to, you know, crack some skulls on the mediocre middle management to make sure that they don't mess with my people. And so there was kind of like a benevolent dictatorship aspect to it, perhaps.
You've read much more on him than I have. But I got the impression that there were also some projects where he would very much go in and micromanage the hell out of things.
Oh yeah. And then it wouldn't. Sometimes he would be right. And other times he would, he was trying to micromanage certain things that he had no business doing when he was pushed out of the company. And so that is unfortunately, he did that. You got to sometimes take the good with the bad, I guess, because that also allowed him to, you know, push through the, it prevented Apple from becoming it didn't prevent Apple from becoming a mature company that then moves very slowly and doesn't invent anything, because they became exactly that in like the 1990s, but it allowed him to come in and just kind of cut through that with a butter knife and almost make it a kind of a startup again as a big company, which is very, very difficult to do.
Well, yeah, you have some firsthand experience on perhaps the pros and cons of working on something where the founder is directly involved. We were saying on the previous episode that there were times when the involvement of the founder in Foursquare Labs meant that you guys could do a lot of things that you wouldn't have otherwise been able to do.
Right, right. Well, I think. I think if Dennis had the personality of Steve Jobs, I don't think I could work with him.
Yeah, I didn't mean to imply that he was.
No, I know. Steve Jobs. It is something to think about, though. It is something I think about a lot because, from what I hear, Steve Jobs acted as if he owned the place. Like anything you had there was like his property.
And companies or movements of any sort potentially suffer from what they call the founder effect. What you were saying before, you know, we don't need to adopt every aspect of someone who's been successful or who established or built a movement just because just because they did it, it must have been, you know, it's the best way or the right way to do a thing. You need to be real careful about what you take and what you leave.
Right. So, okay. So, another example is Apple Park. This is their spaceship like, office.
Not to be confused with Xerox Park.
In Cupertino. What's Xerox Park?
It's the Palo Alto Research Center Park.
Okay.
I believe that's where the both Ethernet and possibly the mouse were invented.
I remember this is one thing that, that's where Apple kind of lifted that off. But
they weren't using it.
I remember this like a little over 10 years ago when Steve Jobs came out, again, failing health, and he went to talk to like the Cupertino board of like supervisors, board like zoning board or whatever, and he had like this amazing presentation about like, you know, oh, it's 100% energy efficient, 50% more trees in the town, like, you know, all this stuff. And the guys at the zoning board were like, is there no way we're not going to approve this? but they tried to ask some token questions. But one of the things that...
I can't imagine that he ever half-assed a presentation.
No.
He was very theatrical.
There were a few times you could watch on YouTube where he was pissed off if something went wrong in the live demo. He's very almost like, an actor that goes on stage that is like, everything has to be exactly right. And my trailer has to be set up and, you know,
all I can think of is the infamous, "We'll do it live," video clip.
Yeah. Yeah. But again, I feel bad judging too much and saying too many good or bad things. You know, he's dead and I don't know him. But I do think that there's a bunch of stuff that we can learn from the examples here. And one of them is Apple Park here, which what I was trying to get to before was one of the key aspects of the design of Apple Park that I believe that Steve Jobs was insistent on. And I also think he brought this into the design of the Apple stores, which he was very involved in. So if you walk into an Apple store, you know, they all have the same design. I feel like he's the type of person who would have micromanaged some of that.
The flow is definitely deliberate.
So flow is very important, and they built that park to maximize random interactions between employees because they realize that innovations get made, things get invented, things get done when there are small random interactions that give people ideas or that lead to collaboration. And one thing that is very sad is that in the last year and a half, almost all tech companies have not just de-emphasized random interactions, but have completely abolished it. I mean,
meaning primarily with the move to remote.
Yeah, yeah. They've completely abolished it. You can't have a random interaction Zoom. And I feel like there are tons of things that would have been invented.
Attempts at doing like a chat roulette version of Zoom meetings.
Oh, my God.
I think my company tried to do something like that. Not totally random, but like for lunches, like you know, put your name into the hat and we'll pair you up with somebody to have a Zoom lunch with this week, which is a good idea, but it doesn't really yield any of the things that I think the type of interactions job was looking
for. Yeah, we had random coffee meetings at Foursquare, but I don't think this is what they were talking about. I think it was the random meeting that is not that doesn't happen because HR told you had to go on a random coffee meeting. It's the random coffee meeting that happened because you walked by someone who asked a question that you happen to know the answer to, or said a keyword, and you're like, ah, you're talking about something that I'm thinking about. Can I ask you a question about that? You know, something like that.
Yeah, we're partially back in the office where I work, and that I think is the biggest potential gain for doing this, that I'm not sold on always being in the office for my own convenience. But yeah, there's an element of collaboration that even if you remove as many of the obstacles as possible for Zoom or Microsoft Teams or whatever tool, collaboration tool you're using. It's not the same as being able to walk over to somebody's desk or run into somebody at the coffee machine and pick their brain about something.
Yeah. Yeah. And just to put a cap on what I was saying, how many things have not been invented that would have been invented or not just invented, but just like how much stuff hasn't gotten done because of this that we are missing out on over the last 18 months? I actually think it's a ton of stuff. I think that the damage that has been done has been absolutely we just don't know how bad it is.
That being said, counting on corporate America to design a system to maximally facilitate inventiveness is a little bit of a fool's errand.
Again, you needed kind of a a benevolent dictator like Jobs was, or you need to, some people carve out places in companies or you get startups. So,
yeah. Well, and maybe a corollary to what we were talking before about, being able to separate the good from the bad in what you learn from in a person. Not everything that worked at Apple, assuming that for a moment we say that all these things were positive outcome, intentionally designed effects. Not all of that is going to scale to other companies for fundamental structural reasons or size reasons or whatever else.
Or they don't have any desire to.
Even if it works at Apple, just because it works at Apple doesn't mean it's going to work at company XYZ.
Yeah. So let's look at Apple today. Steve Jobs isn't there. I feel like he set up a pretty good team in place, but that can only get you so far.
Tim Cook was his successor pretty much immediately. That was right. His chosen successor. It wasn't like there was some revolving door for a while.
And he told him before he died, like, don't ask what I would do. Just do what you would do, which is probably pretty good advice. But yeah, you don't see the types of innovations coming out of Apple that you used to. And even though it's been wildly successful on the business side, I mean, that's what Tim Cook did really well. That's what he was kind of like known for.
Right. Yeah. I haven't looked at the stats recently, but if they aren't still now, at least for a very long period of time, they were one of the most valuable companies in the world. And I think they had cash reserves, which were larger than the GDP of most countries.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, maybe they'll put it into crypto soon, and we'll see.
Not everyone pulls a Musk.
Crypto go boom, or a Michael Saylor. Yeah. So yes.
Do they not have their own Apple coin?
We got the Apple Watch here. That was a couple years later, on the heels of the iPhone and the iPad.
And again, it was not the first smartwatch. No. There's an argument to be made that it might be the best. And if it isn't, it's certainly at the top tier. But they didn't invent the smartwatch. They smoothed some of the sharp edges off of it, though, and made it a much, much better product.
I felt like it was a variation on the theme that Apple had already done.
And they forced the rest of the market to up their game.
Yeah.
Much like with MP3 players or cell phones, that their entry into the market and coming out with not necessarily an earth-shattering upgrade, but something that was just kind of a little bit better in every possible way, forced the competitors to rethink how they were going to approach things.
But I don't think the watch compares to the iPhone or the Macintosh.
I agree. Yeah.
I think it was good. I think if Steve Jobs had been around when it came out, he'd be like, good job, guys. But this wouldn't be like their main event. And even the AirPods, which I have, the AirPods Pro, very good. Arguably, their headphones are their best innovation recently. I think that was back in 2017. But a lot of people say that it's just not as exciting now. Article from Business Insider on the recent iPhone 13. I mean, it doesn't matter who invented the iPhone or who's in charge. Once you're on the 13th, and once you're on V13, there's not that much that you could do that's very exciting. And so they said, iPhone event was very boring. And, camera has more pixels again. We increased the battery life by 5 minutes again. So it says in this, I feel like the Business Insider article here, the way it's written is like, yeah, a lot of people are feeling this way. On Tuesday, Apple introduced the iPhone 13, the newest version of its most popular product. It's a sleek rectangle of metal and glass that is almost identical to last year's device, the iPhone 12. The striking similarities to last year's phone aren't just visual. Functionally, the iPhone 13 is almost discernible from the iPhone 12. Okay. This would have been the iPhone 13 if Steve Jobs was there, but we wouldn't have been...
He wouldn't be working on the iPhone 13. Yes. He'd be working on something else big and innovative coming out of
Exactly. Process. And we just don't know where that is. Now, there's talk about, okay, they're going to get into smart glasses. We've talked about that before.
There's a lot of stuff that we've heard they're working on, you know, quietly or not so quietly, which could be the next big innovations, but which haven't hit the market. So for a while, there's a lot of talk about them in the smart car
sector. Apple car.
There's a Google Glass type competitor. There's been a lot of talk that they were developing something there. But much in the Apple mold, they're not going to release it until they've got it bulletproof rock solid.
Right. And so do they still have it? I don't know. It looks like it's kind of remains to be seen. They don't have what they had, but you know, they still might have enough to get them over the hump on certain things.
Can you think of an example from the Apple product legacy? Something that was released, kind of flopped on the market and was withdrawn. I mean,
Newton.
Okay, so that's a great example, because I was thinking kind of like Google Glass, like it was out there and it wasn't ubiquitous, but they had significant number of units out there to developers, and then it just kind of got pulled back and they said, yeah, the time's not right, put it on ice.
It was personal assistant, PDA device.
Was that the like 90s or the back Palm in the Pilot.
80s? Production ended in 1993 to 98.
Okay.
Oh, wait, yeah, it's 93 to 98, right. And I think there's a lot of similarity between the Newton and the iPhone and the iPad. I mean, not, you wouldn't like look at them and be like, this is the same device, but
there were certainly lessons learned.
I think that they, when this failed, I think they had a fire to like, you know, we must avenge our failure and we'll work for many years until we come out with the iPhone and the iPad. Almost. But yeah, think about that. 98 to 2007 is not that long. It's only 9 years. So that's actually pretty incredible if you think about it. Although, you know, the first iPhone was, if you look at it today, was kind of rough.
And the other thing I wanted to say was in the context of talking about the iPhone 13,
And also they had a lot of software that was a flop.
In a digital revolution world, if you could have every 2 years a product come out that was 5% better in every measurable way, that would have been an amazing rate of growth and innovation.
Right.
We're spoiled by the, you know, 80s, 90s, 2000s and the level of kind of paradigm shifting development we've seen that we expect that to continue in every way. And in some respects, it has, just not, if you're looking at the same product line, there's a plateau happening there.
I think there's a problem functionally where if you tell me that my iPhone is faster, that doesn't matter to me at all. It's already instantaneous. There's nothing that I, like, is there anything else I can do that I couldn't do before? Is
much there like a device we've seen with TVs, where, you know, we had high definition and ultra high definition and then 4K, and they're making better and better TVs. But my understanding is like beyond 4K, the human eye can't actually distinguish the difference. And to some extent, some of these improvements are beyond our ability to distinguish with some rare exceptions of, you know, if you're in a particular edge case, you can see the difference, but.
Right. So that's why I say when they start marketing, I mean, it's fine if they built it in there, but when they start marketing that as the big selling point, I kind of feel like, well, you don't have a whole lot. I mean, because those changes come automatically as, you know, the underlying basic science progresses.
Yeah, the Moore's Law piece and whatnot.
Yeah. So it's like, well, what else can I do with it? And they'll, you know, they'll design some kind of like game that you couldn't do before, but that doesn't look that interesting. I don't know. It's always, I feel like there will be products that come out over the next 10, 20 years that are like, wow, this is a game changer looking back. The iPhone 13 will not be one of them, but you know, I'm still getting one, by the way, just because it's been a year and a half. I got my iPhone.
Well, I was gonna say that's the flip side to that.
Yeah.
I don't think people would be so, unimpressed with the incremental innovations, if it didn't also come with just as much of a ginormous price tag. That if we had incremental innovations and the price came down a little bit, then people might be happier about that.
Well, I have the trade-in program, so I get it automatically, and it was just I haven't traded in for a while because it's always a pain to get a new phone. Like, I almost feel like I'm going back to when the phone is brand new. Like, even if I got an old phone, it would still be like, you know, it's my main benefit is not upgrading to the new phone.
It's getting rid of the bloat.
Yeah. Replacing the old phone with a new phone. Well, no, it's just, you know, as it gets old, it starts wearing down a little bit. It's not as good as it was when you first got it. And, I got the last phone in March 2020. I was the last person in the iPhone in the Apple Store in Brooklyn before it closed down on everybody.
Oh wow!
So I was in there the last day.
One of the things, and this is a big dig at Apple. Although most other major phone manufacturers have gone in the same direction of late, a big problem with the like, you know, 1.5-2 year replacement cycle on smartphones is the battery. And there comes a point when
battery
life cycles start to degrade and you know, you're no longer, you're getting a full day's use out of it without plugging it.
And so if I got a new iPhone 11, it would just be, a fresh new battery.
Well, but I was gonna say Apple was the first one to go to a design that did not have a swappable, never mind replaceable battery. In the old days of flip phones, not only could, when your battery, you know, started not working so well, you could buy a new one, but you know, you had nerds who would run around with a battery and a spare battery with them. So if their battery was getting low, they didn't need to look for somewhere to plug their probably at that point proprietary USB charger in. They'd just literally pop out the dead battery and pop in a fresh one.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you can't do that with an iPhone. Not then, not now.
No, that's for sure. And of course you need a different cable for your iPhone, for your
they're trying to standardize all that now, although they keep every few years changing what the new standard is.
Yeah, I have the watch charger, the contact charging, the USB-C for the MacBook Air that I've got right here, and the iPhone charger.
Yeah, they being the industry at large, not necessarily Apple in particular, but they need to improve the wireless charging. That the efficiency and rate is not where I'd like it to be.
There's a lot to be said about all the charging standards, but I don't know if we want to do an episode where we go through every charging standard. We might lose some listeners.
No, but do you follow XKCD?
I don't follow it, but
so occasionally they'll do they'll drop one in, which I think it's cursed connectors.
Yeah.
There's definitely been some Apple inspired cursed connectors in there.
Okay.
Talking about standards that have been inspired by something evil.
Okay.
We'll have to link to that.
All right. Cool. We will. All right. Well, it's been a great conversation. Once again, we had a great little 20-minute conversation that has gone on for almost an hour, which is what we always do, right?
Well, yeah, if you listen to this at 3x, it only takes 20 minutes.
Yeah, that's true.
I've saved you 40 minutes.
No,
you're welcome.
For those of you who don't know, I always invite Aaron over, and I'm like, look, we're not going to do a very long talk today. We'll just have one topic. We'll talk about Apple. We'll talk about Steve Jobs' obituary. Yeah,
20 whatever. Minutes tops. In and out.
Yeah. And it always goes on for an hour. But anyway, big takeaways from the conversation today. Now I'm trying to think. I think that there are a lot of lessons that we can get from Steve Jobs, and the one that the one that's coming to mind for me that I guess frustrates me the most about the world today, particularly the world in tech today, is how just unbelievably blindingly dull a lot of the messaging and has been in terms of just corporate messaging and just how people are taught to behave and, you know, how people are taught to work. And I think studying Steve Jobs shows that, you know, not only does it not have to be like this, but it really shouldn't be like this if you actually want to accomplish something worthwhile. So again, that's not to say copy what Steve Jobs did, but that's just one of my takeaways.
Yeah, I like the idea of thinking of diversity, not exclusively in terms of a lot of the kind of matrix of oppression, you know, minority checklist type stuff that a lot of HR and admissions departments have been putting additional emphasis on in the last several years, but to more generalize it to a diversity of experiences, a diversity of viewpoints, to which, you know, cultural and racial and ethnic background is certainly an aspect of, but a kind of a wider brush there is a healthy way of approaching a lot of those topics. That there's probably some valuable middle ground that can be gained there.
Yeah. I feel like I used to think that, it's not that I used to think, like, I totally agree with you, but I used to think that I could almost make the argument that we go in that direction and do exactly what you said. And again, your background, as part of I hate the term oppressed group, but whatever, but it matters, but we should look at the whole thing. But I think I've come to the conclusion, like, that's not really what they want to do, and it's not like that most of the corporate elites and HR are going to be into that argument today. Like, it's not that they're waiting to hear the argument. They're just like, that's just not their goal.
Do you want something that's easy to quantify and we can implement now, or do you want something that's going to be hard and difficult and we're not going to do?
Yeah. Yeah,
because that's the question that HR and efficiency experts will ask.
Yeah, no, I think it's deeper than that. I think it's more the ideology based. But okay, I think we both got our last thoughts. I'm going to talk about sampling next time, I think, because I asked you a question about sampling. I'm writing an academic paper on what to do when you have a data set that's sampled unevenly.
Yep. You mentioned this in the Leaving Foursquare episode.
Yeah. And so maybe I'll go over this next time, possibly, because I'm going to be traveling. So maybe I'll do that on a solo show while traveling. But think about it this way. If I have 100 objects and I want to sample half of them, I could flip a coin for each object and I'll end up with about 50, but I won't, probably not exactly 50. Or I could take 50 random ones, so I have exactly 50. What's the difference between those two sampling methods? I'm going to leave that up to the audience to figure out what are those even called? You know, it took me a long time to figure out what the terminology was, and I've been doing this for so many years. So if you have some experience on this or some thoughts on this, if this is a better way to, would you rather be saying, hey, choose 50 random objects, or would you rather go through each object and flip a coin for each one? Which sounds like a better method of sampling to you? Go on our locals, maximum.locals.com, if you have an opinion on this. Also, I'm sure a much broader sense of people have an opinion on Apple and Steve Jobs and all this. I know a lot of people hate Apple. Some people really love Apple. Probably more people love Apple. Honestly, Apple looks a lot better than the big tech companies, like compared to Facebook.
Yeah, they've managed to be the least offensive of the, what is it? Was it Fang or
well,
whatever the acronym of the day is?
How offensive is Netflix? Netflix can be kind of offensive. Yeah, you're right.
Netflix hasn't put their foot in it lately, but yeah. they've had their moments in the last few years.
No, but compared to Facebook and Google, Apple for me is way ahead. They did have a time when they really cared about privacy. I know maybe some of that's been, but okay, we can get into that another time. All right, so looks like our hour is up. Thanks for coming by, Aaron.
Pleasure as always.
All right, have a great week, everyone. That's the show. To support the Local Maximum, sign up for exclusive content and our online community at maximum.locals.com. The Local Maximum is available wherever podcasts are found. If you want to keep up, remember to subscribe on your podcast app. Also, check out the website with show notes and additional materials at localmaxradio.com. If you want to contact me, the host, send an email to localmaxradio@gmail.com. Have a great week.
Feel the power.